Hello and welcome back to The Dive. This is season 6, episode 6, sponsored by the new TFT set. Definitely loved the last one, so I'm excited to see where it's going.
It's all downhill from here. The last set was the best set they have ever made.
Literally everyone was talking about, oh my God, this is the best set. Like, it's been this is the best spot it's been in. This is the peak. Now we're coming down from the peak. Is that what we're about to?
I'm sure there's some pressure to follow up. I feel bad for them. It's like, all right, well, next set's coming out. I hope it's as good. We'll see.
I haven't played TFT since set one, so they're all playing me.
Doesn't matter.
I enjoyed this one as much as the last one.
Exactly.
But
I did hear a lot of people talking about how it was pretty hype. So
it blew up
that.
On Twitch too for a little bit. Yeah. Like everyone was coming back to it.
Yeah, I think there's like player because
there's double up. So even though you haven't played, you can just double up with someone who has played.
Kobe will play with you. Cool. He'll teach you.
Mm-hmm. Will you, Kobe?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you will.
I'll just tell you to send me all the good stuff. And
next
I'll
week, everyone, check back to hear how their duos went. I'll make sure we bring them back up.
I will play a game of TFT with you.
Okay.
All right, we'll check in.
We'll do it for content.
Yeah.
We're going to get these in.
Hey, everyone. Azale here. Jumping in to let you all know that after The Dive finished recording today, some news dropped, and we decided to record an additional portion of the episode. Here it is.
Well, breaking news. Quick dip coming at you. Broke during The Dive while we were recording it. Two roster updates.
Two, Mark?
We got to hit these. You got a double dip of The Dive dips to talk about.
What's the first dip?
The first dip is Core JJ. Green card confirmed. We're pretty sure.
Dodo tweeted TF holding a green card.
Yeah. I like that one. That tastes good.
That's a good dip.
That's a good dip.
You ready for the second dip?
Okay.
I was thinking dip like you're putting your feet in the water. You're thinking of dip like a chips and dip.
It's a fondue dip.
Some flavor.
I don't know. Okay. Anyways, the second
dip. Guacamole flavored green, yeah.
Less tasty, a little sad. Shen Yi being moved to the support position, the academy spot. Your song coming up in reaction to
We literally talked for like 10 minutes about TSM. Yeah. And Zale was like, they're going to make a big change. And I was like, no, they're not. It's only spring. Because
Zale had a leak. He knew the whole time.
Because you know,
my leak was watching what Reggie has done with the team for the last 10 years.
The coaching staff from TSM, though, has been talking about no reason to max Band-Aid for spring. You know, and it's just spring and building. So that this changed to me. You know, the Core JJ one, I was like, when are we going to get it? You know, I had this eventuality. I felt like it was inevitable. But this, the TSM one is more...
I think they're both, it's interesting, right? I mean, the Core JJ one, like on one hand, you could think, oh, it was going to come down the pipeline at some point, but green cards can be nasty. And if he couldn't get it, like if you don't get approved, it could have just been ALA forever, right? And I actually think it's interesting because it was less of a story because ALA was playing so well, right? And ALA was doing a really good job slotting in. But at the same time, and I've said this on broadcast before, you are missing potentially the best player in the league. And it's not that like, and people aren't even talking about it that much, right? Because TL have been doing well. But this is a massive boost to Team Liquid as far as, you know, what he brings, not only from gameplay, but like listening to his shot calling and how much of an in-game leader he is, how much of a presence he is, you know, for the team. Obviously, he's still been trying to contribute as much as he could while not playing. But like, this is huge for TL. And that is scary for all the other teams at the top of the table because Core JJ is back.
How long before we start asking for ALA if Core JJ struggles?
That's not going to happen.
No.
It's not too soon right now. You should start that movement.
Where's ALA at, man? I liked ALA. Bring it back.
He deserves to be on an LCS team.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. He definitely deserves to be a starter. This also adds so much to our match of the week, though. The EG versus Team Liquid game. EG's pissed
Return
now.
Of the core.
They're pissed now. Core JJ's coming back, and we have a clash of really good trash talkers, okay? Core JJ has been really active with his Twitter. Mm-hmm. All of the EG players have fully embraced the hashtag Live Evil, so there had better be some good ones coming up, building up to this weekend. I'm expecting some really, really spicy ones. I think, though, this whole story of the Core JJ one is very one-dimensional, and that you know, everybody's going to be happy. It's great. You know, you can come
Except
up with
opponents.
How do you think? How do you think this is going to, you know, change the game? Blah, blah, blah. But the TSM one is more interesting to me because it is more surprising to me specifically, but also feels very, very scary for a team that already starting out 0-4 and is trying to climb their way out of it feels like the panic button has already been hit. People were wondering, okay, you know, do we just fully believe in the growth pattern for this team and we're trying to build up? Should we panic? Most people, I feel like, had settled on, okay, give them some time. Not quite yet. They're building.
He didn't even play in lock-in. Like, I actually think it's crazy. I thought they would make changes if they continued to do bad. But yeah, I mean, I knew there would be something major, mm-hmm. but just TSM historically has never accepted really bad results. And when things are going poorly or they don't think they're going to win, like, they come in and they change something, right? It happens every time. And I am just shocked that it's after just four games because they didn't even play in lock-in. Well, he didn't even play in lock-in. This is four games.
And you also, when I was like questioning it, you also said not a player change. You're like, oh.
Yeah, maybe a player change, but at least a play style change for sure is what I was thinking. But this is just much faster than I expected.
On Hotline League, I was saying too, like if you have really bad like momentum and your head's in the wrong space, it's really hard to get out of that without something to jumpstart the mental shift. And a lot of the times that can be changes in roster, coaches, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, like, if they're super tail spinning, sometimes you do need something to try and kick you into a honeymoon phase where you're like, oh, at least this is different.
But that can also completely mental boom your import that you just got,
yes.
right?
And like, that's why I'm surprised it's so fast. But I also say one thing is if you have the data to know that you're making the right call, sometimes you just got to do it, even if it sounds awkward and it seems counterintuitive to your initial messaging. Like, the team didn't look good, if we're being honest, about TSM.
Yeah,
you could argue they're the worst team in the league. And Shenyi has been on and off with his engages and was clearly disconnected from the team at parts. Like, if it's not working and scrims look the same way and you've been watching this for 2 weeks through probably 60 plus games, 50 games, depending on how many scrims you're playing a week, like that's enough data to start making some decisions.
So I'll read the actual wording they said. Basically, as a recent arrival, Shenyi requires more time to adjust to NA. He will benefit from Academy League's environment whilst accumulating more game time at a more comfortable pace. So, you know, they may say it's not for performance, but like, I feel like we all kind of like know what these sort of changes are, right? Like, if you start 4-0, he's not getting subbed out. So at the end of the day, it's really a performance thing.
It's probably not like on stage performance. It could be that his performance is suffering because he's not used to NA and he feels homesick and he's depressed. You know, like, there could be, you know, real problems that he's going through beyond on stage performance. But, you know, like, those are things that they need to sort in order to get performance out of him.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that wording can be true, that he needs time to adjust to NA and like life here and the pressure and stuff. And maybe they're doing this to, you know, protect him from TSM fan backlash or just other people's backlash. I don't know exactly. But it doesn't feel good based off the start of the season.
And especially when he was supposed to be their more guaranteed prospect, right? Kato was the more speculative one. Whereas as far as I've been told from people, you know, in LPL, like, Shenyi had LPL starting offers, like, right? Like, he was not just some LDL guy. He played some sub-games for FPX in the LPL.
They won
some games, yeah. Obviously, he was on a really good team. He only played a few games. But, like, on other teams, he had offers. Mm-hmm. So he chose to come here over starting on an LPL team. So I'm really, really surprised. Like, they looked worse than I expected out the gates, but it's also just so early that I'm shocked. And it'll be interesting to see how Yersan does. I mean, it's an exciting opportunity for him. But, I mean, you know, like, it almost makes you wonder. If they start winning with Yersan, you just never go back to Shenyi? Like, you know, it's kind of, it puts in this weird situation.
I mean, I hope that this has been bred from some positive stuff that they've seen internally. Like you're saying, they have much more internal info, but just one day ago, they're tweeting out like spring is an improvement split and, you know, no reason to max Band-Aid for, you know, results right now. And so that's kind of why
it makes it feel knee jerky for sure.
And probably they're going to say, well, this isn't the max Band-Aid. They're not dumping the whole roster, but still it's like the implication behind those tweets from Kays is that, yeah, like, chill out guys. We're not going to change anything. It's spring is first or last. Doesn't matter. We're going to improve and focus on summer.
Yeah.
Which I agree with.
Yeah. But they kind of like cut the legs out from that already.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was like.
The final thing I'll say to bring it back to a positive. On the core JJ point, I did want to say the one thing that makes it from being totally 1-0 is it's also just a cool life advancement or like a new stage for him in life.
Yeah.
So like,
congratulations, core.
From the LCS perspective of gameplay, we all knew this was coming. We're excited. Yeah. But just like for him, this has to feel like such a huge
relief off his shoulders when you didn't know if it was going to happen or not.
As yeah. someone who was in that process for years, it is actually so stressful traveling without a green card when you're on visas, especially when you're on like, you know, specific visas for gaming and whatnot. The chances of crossing the border and someone not understanding it and like either hassling you, like I've been detained at the border multiple times with that, missed flights. And you can just get denied at the border, like randomly, because people don't know what the hell you're talking about, especially if you have a weird kind of visa, right? Like, I'm not sure exactly what type he was on, but I was on O1, which is like a rare type, and you can have so many problems. So it ends up being super stressful. Getting green cards, huge sigh of relief. And I'm also just so excited to see the kind of like promised duo of Hansama and CoreJJ, because Hansama has been really good with Ayla, and we've been waiting for that for a while.
Now back to the previously recorded dive episode. Reminder that we touched on TSM and TL before learning the news.
All right, we got a bunch of Anchor FM questions from you guys. And so we wanted to go through a number of them. We have four that we're going to hit. First one is going to come from Hunter Spackman.
Hey guys, Hunter here. Huge fan of the show. Here's my question. Which champion or item is currently being underutilized in professional play and could be seen in a potential LS-like draft in the coming weeks? I say this with more and more teams choosing to go Smite top. Could we see teams counter this draft with hard split pushers like York, Nastus, or Tryndamere? Or has Kobe been training contracts on his legendary Shaco jungle? You tell me. Thank you guys. Absolutely love the show.
Anyone have a hot take? We all just looked up at each other.
I think that there's a lot of items that end champions. And when you're talking about items, something that I know is getting massively popular in solo queue and is breaking into pro play a little bit, Hullbreaker. But people are building Hullbreaker on literally everything in solo queue now. It's like, you name it.
I mean, also, I feel like every LCS game now is literally two Hullbreakers, Tryndamere and Graves.
Yeah.
Every single game.
And I think it's just going to go even more because I've been seeing it on literally every AD top laner. I've seen it on Riven. I've seen it on Aurelia. I've seen it on, people are doing it on Aatrox. People are doing it on literally every champion. They're just like, wow, this item is actually so good. And when your opponent builds it, like, people are feeling that the bonus armor in MR is just so valuable that you are almost forced into it.
I think it's a trap a little bit. I think there's times where it feels really good, but I think sometimes it's a big trap.
It's the new Steryx, essentially, is that people are just thinking that this is an item that makes you tanky, is relatively affordable, has a pretty good build path, and they don't want to build Steryx anymore, so they build this first, Mythic second, and they're on their like two-item spike. That feels very similar to what they were on before, so...
But this one is so different because Steryx is generic power, mm-hmm. and it was super stuffed with extra tankiness and power.
Yeah.
So there, it was good in all these situations where people were picking up. Problem with Hullbreaker, kind of to Mark's point, is that people have been buying it and then grouping a bunch, and so you don't get the benefit. So yeah, that one is definitely used a lot. But yeah, not always used optimally a lot.
I think it feels really, it's like one of those items that feels incredible in lane because it's such a monstrous pickup when you get it. It's like this insane gold thing. And you usually get it pretty quickly because it's not super expensive. It's 2,800. So you can get that early and then you're a monster in side lanes. And then when you go, especially in pro play, to the later portions of the game and you start getting your allies, you can wipe off literally everything on the item except 50 attack damage and 400 health in 150 base regen.
Yeah.
And that's all it becomes. And that's pretty bad for a legendary item. Like, you wouldn't buy that if that's all it said.
Yeah.
And that's what people are bringing to team fights a lot of times. And that's why I think it's a bit of a trap, because it feels so good for the first 20 minutes of the game, and then it becomes a pretty useless stat stick 25 and on.
You have to keep playing sides. I mean, if you're continuing to play sides, I don't think it's
right. And for people who do that, this is not the criticism for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of like that answer to the question, though, because this is actually an item that's bought a lot, but is not always utilized correctly a lot.
Yeah.
My answer is something that hasn't been bought a lot in LCS, but it's not really like an specifically tailored to an LS comp of Enchanters, but I kind of can fit it in there because Vhagar is also Vhagar V2.
You stole mine.
Is also a coach for Cloud9 and he plays obviously Vhagar, which mm-hmm. got nerfed on this batch, so he's probably pissed, but Anathema's Chains I think is really underutilized as a CC enhancer, not a damage reduction. Yeah, see,
you weren't gonna go there, Mark.
It's okay.
No. Yeah, I got baited when you said Vhagar.
It's the CC enhancing part of it I feel like is completely overlooked, and everybody wants to utilize it just for the damage reduction on putting on, you know, whatever biggest fed person is on the opponent team. But you can 100% to zero people so easily if you are bringing any sort of champion that has hard CC. And why Veigar is such a big good example, obviously Event Horizon, which did get nerfed on this patch, plus building Everfrost. If you have multiple forms of CC, like you actually really get to take someone out of the entire game. It's really crazy how much. The only problem I would also say though is get a little bit careful when you buy it with a range champion, because there is a range attached to the tenacity reduction on it. And they're not specific, so you have to go to the wiki to look up the exact range and like maybe go and practice tool to get the exact range down.
All right, mine is one that I thought Azale was going to say for sure. Twitch top. It's, correct me if I'm wrong, but the highest win rate top laner.
At least it was.
It was for a little bit. I assume it still is. I mean, 12-4 does hit the strat a little bit, but I think Twitch played it differently enough than the enchanters that it's probably fine for him.
I think he's actually hurt more, to be honest.
You think he's hurt more? Really?
Yes, because I think he was the highest win rate in 12-3. But I mean, top three was him, Janna, and Zillion. I actually do think picking up some of the farm matters maybe a bit more for him.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking that maybe you would
just... The support item farm cap kind of hurts.
Yeah, the support item thing. But I wondered if you would just like adapt the build and be like, meh, whatever about the support item farm cap. And then maybe it hurts the people who can't do that more. But that's an adaptation we'll have to see. But either way, the Twitch works better in solo queue because the less coordination, the better Twitch is just in general. Mm-hmm. So I understand why people are hesitant to do it in LCS, but I also would just love to see someone try.
And I've seen some people bringing it out like in Champions queue. Mm-hmm. I saw Someday actually play it in Champions queue. And so people are experimenting with it. It is a known strategy. I think it's really strong for sure in solo queue. I think it's absolutely busted. I've played maybe, I don't know, 6 or 7 games of it now. I think I've like every single game I've gone godlike. It's just like if you're playing an unorganized play, like just normals or whatever, it's super fun. People never have enough pink wards for you. You can just start and you play Ignite, you don't play Smite. Mm-hmm. So it's just like level 1, you can just start with a sweeper, be in side brush at mid lane, and you just
hit the mid lane or ignite them and their laning phase is over. Yeah, they're tilted out into the moon.
Exactly. Like you queue in level 1, you have Ignite, you're playing Halo Blades, like you can chunk them completely out. And you can literally just do this twice. I'll often gank them mid lane. I was going to side wait for my Q cooldown again. And you can do it twice before the minions are going to crash top. Because you just have to get top for when the minions are going to crash to actually catch the wave and get some XP. And then you just get like, you farm a couple waves. And generally, I would farm a couple waves. So this is where it's kind of hurt. And I'd get 650 gold. I get Dark Seal boots. And then I'm never going top lane again. And it's really, really fun.
I will say also, AP Twitch has had success in 3 roles now. As like the play pattern, especially for the level 1 gank mid, is the same as support AP Twitch. It's just for solo queue. Because it is the same, very roam heavy, but also some challengers were doing AP Twitch mid, and that was not a starve Twitch mid though. That was the farm Twitch mid. So AP Twitch in general, I think is one of those builds that we kind of referred to last episode where we're talking about. I loved in the past when you could have completely different builds for the same champion.
Yeah,
and it would be different and it would be successful. Some of them have been killed, like, you know, AP Tristana, AP Master Yi, stuff like that. But
so if it shows up in the LCS, it'll be dead soon.
Some survive. And actually, that kind of, now that I'm saying it, might bode poorly for AP Twitch.
Yeah.
He might have a, you know, wanted poster.
Well, speaking of the AP Twitch and top lane and stuff, we actually had one of the anchor questions related to this for Mr. Azale. Let's see what they have to say.
This one is for Azale. On Saturday night, February 12th, you were playing Spell Thieves Twitch top with Ignite in a normal game, and you spent the whole game chasing my little brother in the jungle, and you made him rage quit League of Legends. Why would you do that, and what is wrong with you?
What is wrong with you?
But I'm sorry about what I said about you being bald.
All right.
Whoa. What did he say about you being bald?
I don't know.
In the game?
Anytime someone gets angry at me in game, their go-to comment is always just like something, you're bald. I'm like, okay.
Gotcha. They really gotcha with that one.
I really wish I knew how old his little brother was, because I can just imagine he's like this 12-year-old and Azale is just killing him over and over again, makes him rage quit.
I've had a few games where I had like 20 kills. So even though you're not farming, you quickly have all of your items, and And then at that point, I don't even need my jungler. I'm just looking for 1v1s. I'm going anywhere I want. So
do you remember this game? Maybe.
I mean, it's not specific enough.
All the 20 kill, you know, support Twitch roaming games.
I've been playing it on a few different accounts. I've been playing it normals a lot lately. So I'm not sure specifically on this game. On February 12th, Saturday, I don't know.
Well, on behalf of the Dive, I apologize to the Roth brothers.
I do not apologize.
For Azale's transgressions.
Watch out.
I'm doing a PR here for the
watch
Dive.
Watch out, 12-year-olds. Azale's coming for you. He's going to mess you up in the jungle.
It's definitely fun. All right.
Ruthless.
My bad. All right, we got another one here. This one's from Immune Buffalo.
Hey, guys. I wanted to ask who you think the best jungler in the league is, but I wanted to ask it in a different way. So here it is. If you were building a roster and import slots didn't matter and your only choices for jungler were any of the 10 currently starting LCS junglers, who would you pick and why?
My initial thought is I'm not sure if there's a difference between just saying who I think is the best and who would I want to start a team with from this current pool.
Yeah,
because there's sometimes where someone's like on the tail end of their career and, you know, they might retire soon and I'm a GM starting a new team. Like there's a period of time where Smithy was maybe the best jungler in the LCS, but I might have preferred a younger talent maybe if this was like a draft.
I mean, I guess it depends how real world you're getting, because then money matters as well. Right.
Oh, that's true.
You could just say we're not getting that real world and it's literally just who we think is the best.
I mean, you also could just say I'm picking this person because I like them, you know, so it leaves the door
nepotism
open for
that. Hey! All right, does anyone have a pick?
I think I would probably say Inspired when I think about it. I think Inspired has been, you know, really, really good. I do think it's probably between him and probably a lot of people will say River because he's been super, super impressive. But there's actually a lot of good junglers in the league right now. So I do think it becomes a pretty difficult question. And it kind of depends like what kind of play style you think is really strong for junglers right now. But yeah, I think EG have a pretty darn good jungler.
I would say my only problem Inspired is thus far through only Spring Split, isolated to 4 games, he hasn't been great.
But this is talking about I'm making a
right,
team,
that's
right?
What I'm
and
saying.
Then I'm
that's
not
why,
looking at just these 4 games.
That's why this question is worth differentiating, because like I would not agree with Inspired normally, but for this, the way it's asking, I can actually see that a lot.
Yeah. Because he was really good in lock-in, and he was the best jungler in EU last year, right? Like I still put a lot of value on him.
Yeah. I'm going to ignore the question and answer it my own way.
Okay.
I would say who's playing the best in the LCS right now is
in spring only?
In spring, yeah. These 4 games.
So not lock-in, okay.
Blabber and Closer are probably the two that I would be waffling between. I think even in that Immortals game they lost, like the only reason it was close was Closer.
How about that Karthus game though?
That was a doozy.
Because I think that was a bit of a stinker.
That was a bit of a stinker. But I think most people have had a stinker game or two right now in the jungle. Because like you said, it is really tough.
Yeah.
And you get outplayed sometimes. And I think Inspired, as good as he is, has been out jungled. I think Dig. River has had...
What a roller coaster. I'm trying to follow the brain of Mark Z here.
It was all over the place.
Don't look too close.
His J4 games are obviously incredible. I think his Zin game was actually okay this weekend. And I think it was the Poppy game he ended up on that I didn't like as much, if I remember.
Yeah, that's why I was like, if you're thinking that it's simple and you're only whittling it down to a couple of junglers... I think that's a big mistake. One of the biggest things this year, I feel like, is jungle the entire pool. Like this is probably our strongest pool.
But you have to pick one, Kobe. That's why I'm
player.
Down to two. Yeah. And at some point, I'm going to kill one of these two.
Kill one. So he went Inspired.
Blabber for the Karthus game. I'm killing him. Closer.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That was the one that I was going to bring up because... And I especially like it because of the framework that you laid out beforehand of who's playing the best right now. Not only was Closer's finals MVP, but Closer has been the hardest carry of the junglers so far in spring.
Yeah, if you're
is
only looking
10
at spring,
KDA.
Because in lock-in, he was, I think, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, we're talking about spring.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm saying, I threw out lock-in, yeah. I'm just looking at spring, so that's why I'm going Closer, yeah.
10 KDA, you know, all these Viego games, all the resets, like, this man definitely seems like he has crescendoed in the LCS, you know, built up to like last year, obviously winning was the peak, but I feel like that level is going to continue for him. So I took me a long time actually to jump on the Closer hype train. I was not one to jump on early, but he's won me over. So man, Closer Blabber, River, Pride Stalker, Inspired, Spica. Ah, Spica's getting...
Spica's having a rough start.
I feel like Spica's doing too much, so I wouldn't even have him in the top.
Well, that's why the thing that... The way Azale answered it, I didn't want to answer it that way, is because you could argue that Spica's actually a great answer for, like...
Yeah, you would still start
Holy Blind, I would be like... Yeah.
You just wouldn't have him translating also and doing all this.
Yeah, I would build,
the rest of the stuff differently.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, if it is the real world thing, like, you have to consider him.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to go River.
He's the reigning MVP.
Yeah. Why would you not pick the reigning MVP who's a young juggler with a lot of upside?
Or at least consider, right?
Yeah. I'm going to go River because...
Good Twitter game.
Exactly.
You got it. Real world. You're ratio like, anyone. Branding is pretty good. Yeah, you're going to ratio people.
Just have them go out there and ratio all the other teams.
You're saying River.
All right, next question. Let's get the next one here.
If Obi just goes River and starts up.
I'm trying to explain my pick and you just...
I'm sorry.
We got one more. It's from Festus. Is it Festus? Festus?
Hey, guys. I have to ask about TSM. After watching the last 2 weeks, it feels like it was a major greed to import two LDL level guys and think that they can immediately compete on the LCS stage. So my question is, do you think that it was an arrogant move for TSM to import these two relatively unproven guys and expect wins right away? Thanks for taking the question, and Cat for Kobe.
Woo! My first reaction is I don't think they approached it from an arrogant place. From all the conversation with TSM and all the stuff that they've put out as well, they approached it from a place of progress and trying to build.
Developmental roster.
And so I feel like they took into consideration not having immediate success. They probably did not want to, you know, be literally tied for 10th with CLG, as evidenced by Reggie's earlier comments that he would never
sell his house, never sell his car, sell his clothes,
end up like CLG. But I don't think that gets kind of retconned into thinking, oh, TSM somehow thought they were going to come in and slam, or
I think they specifically said that they were expecting slow spring.
Yeah, but to the caller's, you know, point, even expecting slow, you don't want to like win zero games you know, at the bottom there. But I will say they have a much more, you know, progressive view on it.
Yeah, I think the discourse around TSM has become extremely hyperbolic with the recent, you know, struggles, where people who wanted to see TSM crash and burn are saying like, kind of stuff like, oh, they were arrogant to think this would work. And it's like, that was never their goal. Like, I don't understand this criticism that, you know, they brought in some development players from the LPL or China, but that they thought could work out. C9 did the exact same thing, and Berserker and Winsome look great. They don't have any more experience.
Summit is very different, though.
I didn't say Summit. Did I say Summit?
No, you didn't.
But yeah, I'm not even including Summit.
Like, as far as bringing people in, right? Part of the bringing people in was bringing in a super, super established guy.
Yeah,
so
but
I do think it's still different.
Bot lane is entirely... Yeah. developmental from that perspective. So, you know, I look at that and I say, you can bring over young players from other regions who can succeed. It's worked before. I don't think TSM was in the wrong to try this. And that's where I think the criticism from stuff like this is just like really hyperbolic. And at the same time, people who are like, oh, well, they're a development roster. Eighth to 10th place was expected. It's like, no one was saying that coming into the year. Mm-hmm. And you have the reigning MVP, Huni, and Tactical. Tactical was at Worlds recently, you know, like...
Yeah, I was getting angry tweets for saying that they might be 5th, 6th, right? And
yeah.
So it's weird to see how the goalposts have kind of shifted.
Yeah, it feels like it's so hard to get like a honest, realistic take from TSM, about TSM from the different fans. Because one group wants to see them crash and burn, and one group's like hard copium, like, this is what we always knew was going to happen, even though none of us said this a month ago, it felt like, you know, like it's hard to get a read.
Yeah. Well, I would just use a different word. Instead of arrogant, I would say it was very risky of a choice. They knew that they were taking a risk, but because of, you know, having Peter Zhang on coaching staff, having Spica be able to speak, Mandarin as well, you know, well, Chavi is something that they brought in with all these changes.
Yeah.
The other two people I mentioned,
well, I just meant
they were
as part of the thing. Yeah, yeah.
They wanted to make this push, and I do like when the teams are branching out and going for these experiments. That's why LCS this year is so vibrant and has so many different strategies. This one, I will say, has been an underperformance, even considering for me that it was a risk in the first place, because all of the other teams also took risks in to varying degrees in varying different directions, is maybe would be my take on it.
And I mean, at the end of the day, it's like the a lot of people are talking about how competitive the league is right now. It's extremely competitive from top to bottom. TSM has not gotten absolutely blown out in all their games. Mm-hmm. Like, they could have picked up a couple wins, and then I think that the discussion is wildly different. So I do think it's a pretty big overreaction. You know, it has become somewhat hyperbolic, like you were talking about, Mark, where, you know, TSM fans had high expectations, and now people are almost like pretending that those didn't exist. And on the other side, people are saying, oh yeah, well, they were going to always be 10th. And it's like, well, no, they weren't, right? They have the reigning MVP. They have Hooney. Tactical has been really good for like in the league for a while. I mean, last year he had a bit of a down year, but still, right? Mm-hmm. It's a World's AD carry, World's finalist, and MSI champion top laner, and the reigning MVP. You're not supposed to be 10th. You're not supposed to be limitless. So I think arrogant is not the word that I would use. But you know, you could say, hey, like, if this continues, they just didn't do a good job with how they built the roster, or the players coaching, didn't pan out, like, or coaching or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's way too early to obviously fully judge this TSM roster. I think that's the other thing that we have to say, is like, they can easily improve. They could end up, who knows, top five. Who the hell knows, really? But until we get more information about that, it's kind of hard to write the final word. But
I do think some little things, like Shenyi has had good mechanics, really quick engages. So like there's some positives that you start to look for in the building blocks.
Yeah, I think there's things that you can both build up, like Kaido's mechanics as well have looked really good when he's usually in 1v1 situations and stuff. But then there's also things where it's like, well, your people who don't have language barrier issues are miscommunicating, like top dives, and Shenyi and Kaido have been off the same page, which is more like not seeing the game the same way. So I think some of those things you can talk about. The question I want to pose to both of you is a follow-up from JLXP. If you saw with Freak earlier, they're trying to predict where they thought TSM would finish in wins. Freak said 3-15. Jat said 6-12.
3-15, I think, is ridiculous, personally.
I didn't watch the whole episode to see the reasoning, but I just watched that like little time clip, because
3-15 makes you one of the worst teams ever. I don't think they're one of the worst teams ever, right? Like, you are abysmal if you're 3-15. I think it's,
hey,
it's,
don't sell a Coast's name from the 0-18, or whatever, they 1-17 or something.
I think 1-17, maybe. Yeah. Maybe. But
I don't think we've ever had a team never win a game.
Yeah
we have never had a winless team.
It's early. They didn't even have their team playing in lock-in, right? They were playing Academy and stuff. They played 4 games. They could have easily won the Golden Guardians game. And I'm trying to remember, but I think there was at least one other game that was like quite close. I don't have them exactly clear in my head.
I'd have to look
but this back. Is a team that I do expect to actually start getting better over time. And I also just think if it's that bad, they're going to make some sort of change, whether it's playstyle or roster or whatever. And they're just going to say, all right, all resources on to Spica. Let him carry us to some wins. He's the reigning MVP. And Spica is good enough to get his team
just
more
than
3 wins.
Though, you think they would do that just for wins in spring? Because if your goal is to build this team up, you know, this is a very, you know, progression base. We're trying to improve.
If you are losing every game, I think they will change their playstyle. 100% yes. Because I don't think that, Even if you're saying in the ideal world, we want to play X style, if you are 0-9 and you're halfway through the split and you don't have a single win, I think they are going to change because your team will be mentally destroyed. I don't think you're improving that much at that point anymore. I think not necessarily just getting rid of players, but shifting the way that you are playing, changing the style that you're going for, I think for sure. I don't think it's smart in any scenario to allow your team to be obliterated that bad. I just don't think it's cohesive for growth.
That seems really hard to do as well in the middle of spring split. Like
changing champion picks and stuff? That's all I'm talking about. Like,
oh, I thought you said roster change.
No, I'm saying,
like play style. Like play style. Put more eggs in the Spica basket.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, like they don't have to change roster necessarily. I mean, they could sub people out for Academy if it's really a disaster.
But their Academy's 10th place,
but I'm just talking about, like, man, just put more trust in Spica and allow him to be the carry, build around him, play a support mid. Like, you can do things to get wins. I don't think TSM will be okay with getting to the halfway point of the split and having no wins and not changing anything. I think Spica is too good of a player to not get you more than 3 wins. 3 wins to me is just ridiculous.
I'm with you as well, because you have to look at the rest of the landscape of the league.
Yeah.
And like you said, the Golden Guardians game was close. They could have won that one.
Okay, how many? How many wins?
You're prediction gunning me? You're taking my gun?
he gave a speech, but no prediction.
Because I wasn't asked for a prediction.
I'll give a prediction.
That was Mark's question, is how many wins are they going to get?
Jet said 6-12, Freak said 3-15. I think based off the landscape of the league, other teams will have games that they underperform and TSM will have games that they play well. And like, you'll pick up more than three along the way. I'll say, just so I don't copy Jat's homework, 5-13.
I'm going to go one up then. I'm going to go 7.
I was going to go 7.
Yeah.
I mean, we all just took Jat's number. Well,
I mean, that was kind of in the range that I was at because I don't think they are worse than I expected. So I do think you're starting from a deficit. I already thought they might be middle of the pack. So if I'm putting sixth at, you know, 500 or slightly below 500, and I think they're going to finish a little bit lower than that, seventh, eighth, that means you're a couple games below that, right? Like,
well, the only thing,
you know, you're 7-11 or whatever.
The thing about from here, they've played four games, so they have 14 left. And if you finish with 7 wins, you go 7-7 the rest of the way. And that feels a little optimistic for me to go 50-50 from here on out. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm going more 5.
Nice stuff. The Dignitas game, wasn't the Dignitas game quite close as well? I'm trying to think about that one. That was the, because that was a 38-minute game. I feel like they could have easily won two of those games. I don't know. Maybe I'm overestimating, but I do think that, like, Spica should be able to get you some wins, man.
I mean, I'm with you. I just think from the current position, you know, looking at 500 from here on out is the only thing.
Maybe it is too optimistic.
I don't know. But it's like I'm 5-6, you know, within that range.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Interesting question. Definitely a lot to talk about with it. And it'll be really interesting to see what TSM actually wants to do. You know, how reactive will they get, right? Especially Reggie's going to get some heat for it. Reggie's already getting heat for you know, his comments about, yeah, we're never going to be as bad as CLG. Like, if we're doing bad like that, you know, I'm going to sell my stuff. We're going to fix it. Mm-hmm. But obviously, some of the TSM people, I think it was Jack Case, right?
Case, yeah.
He came out and said, hey, like, it's early in spring. Only first place, you know, we think only first place matters in spring. And if we're not going to get that, there's no reason to make crazy changes or to get too crazy.
That's what I was saying. I was like, I don't think spring...
I do think the pressure really starts to mount, though. And Reggie is famous for stepping in when things are going poorly. So I think there's going to be huge pressure on the coaching staff. If they hit 0-9, I'm betting on changes.
Something
big is going to change. Whether it's a player or a coach or a clear shift in strategy, I think if you hit the halfway point win list, something big changes for sure.
Yeah. Won't happen, though. I bet my house on it. I bet my car that
won't happen that they hit 0-9.
Yeah.
I agree with that. But I think if it were, I think they would pull back on the, like, oh, we're not going to change anything.
I'll bet my apartment I don't own. I'll bet a car I don't own.
Oh, you're just needing Reggie. Okay.
Yeah.
That was too slow on that. I just thought you were going to start saying you're a bet, you know, like, that you're, yeah.
Yeah, I'm betting all these things that I either rent or.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, something that might help them get back into it could be a bunch of patch changes. Maybe if they change something about you can only buy this Infinity Edge if your name is Tactical or something okay. like that.
I was like, where's it going with this? Also, thank you guys for sending all the Anchor FM questions. Oh, yeah. We actually had a ton of really good ones. There was even a bunch more that we could have used, so we wanted to kind of do a bit of a thank you to everyone. So we answered a bunch this week. Keep sending them, and thanks for the good audio quality again. We appreciate the improvements y'all are scaling. But 12.4 mm-hmm. is out now. Smite top haters, rejoice, because that did finally get changed at least a bit.
At least a little bit.
Yeah, see... I don't, it's not actually changing a whole bunch.
I don't think it affects what they are doing in pro with enchanters.
It
definitely
actually,
nerfs it in solo queue though.
Yeah.
At least it's going to move the needle for sure.
I think the thing that scares me is there's so many of these roaming smite top games where they don't even play that well and then they stall the game and win later.
That's just because enchanters are overpowered.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but that's my point about with these changes is like, okay, so to be specific, the objective bounties, they're tweaking those a little bit. They're also changing the support gold income. And for both of those, that doesn't really feel like looking at it from a pro angle. It's like Impact's dying mid lane twice, or, you know, bot and mid. He dies twice in the first 10 minutes of the game and is like pretty useless, but like, they just stall the game out with wave clear and the fact they scale better, and then they win the game at 30 minutes. It's like the objective bounties didn't really matter. How much gold the Karma got didn't really matter.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think the strat's still there in pro play, probably, but maybe teams are still just like seeing it get pushed away from, and that pushes them away from it too.
And it's not played, like, as much as I really am not that big of a fan of the strategy and kind of want it to be killed off, the pick rate in solo queue has never gotten that high, right? Janna is the only one that has like a reasonably high pick rate. And that got to 1.7%, right? You know, Twitch is like 0.5%. Zillion was like 0.3% for a 12.3. So, I mean, it's reasonable, but, you know, champions like Fiora is like a 7% pick rate, right, by comparison, right? So it's not just running over solo queue. It will for sure affect the win rate of anyone doing it in solo queue. The biggest thing with the support income thing is not just that it's went from 1 minion per wave to 2 minions per wave or whatever, like not that change, or 2-to-1, excuse me. It's that it actually starts counting from when the first wave spawns instead of from when the game starts. Because on the old patch, you could actually fully farm the first two waves and get 12 CS right off the bat before you got hit by the minion penalty. Now it actually starts on the word go. So you can only get 2 minions on the first two waves. So that is actually a pretty big difference because, yes, you weren't trying to have perfect CS, but getting... like when you went top to soak, if you could pick up two waves of farm in the first three waves, you're now level 3. You have a buy, like a boots or a dark seal or a something, and then you can move around the map. And it is relevant to have that. Mm-hmm. You cannot have that now. So people like the impact game was actually pretty terrible. And in a game like that, if you can't pick up farm here and there, like you have no gold. You got what, a 30 something minute sight zone transform? Like he just wasn't hitting anybody, right? And so you actually have to actively hit people to get any money from your spell thieves, and then you have to be having fights to get money too because you can't really farm at all. So I do think it matters, not that much for pro play. For solo queue it does matter, but not that many people are even doing it in pro. It's just kind of like, it's just kind of around, everyone knows it.
Well,
but like
not part of the reason that not that many people are doing it, and they've said it specifically, is that they expect it to be removed from the game, so they don't want to waste time on it.
Yeah,
I've heard that specifically from multiple players and multiple people in positions on coaching staff of teams.
Yeah, but it's still here.
It's not that it's not strong. That's not why they're not doing it. One thing I really like about these changes, though, is that they also hit the objective gold bounties being generated. That formula now will take into account that you have two support items on your team. But that's also because I just have never liked the objective bounties being implemented into the game and think they get turned on still too early.
Do you think they've been working weird lately, by the way, or is that just me?
I feel like something has changed. They've been working weird.
I had a game last night where we were down. It was like the other team had 34 kills and Soul, and we had like 14 kills and we still didn't have bounties. And we're like 10K down and they have Soul. And then I had a game where we literally are killing their Nexus and we were up like 15 kills and we had Soul. And we got objective bounties for killing their Nexus towers as we were like stomping the game massively ahead. Yeah. And I'm like, what is happening here?
My most frustrating moments have been when it's early game and I have focused on topside and gotten rift trailed in lots of turret plates for ganking in exchange for dragons.
And then we
got bounties right before this other team that usually in the most frustrating situations have better scaling picks are about to get some of the towers that they've been working on for a while, but we got these big early gold bounties because we focus on it so much early. That turning point to me feels the most painful and why like I don't like the universality of these objective bounties and how they're just blanketly applied. And there are a lot of pain points that can come in games that are at pivot points like that.
Yeah, I think the Azale point that he was talking about as well, where like you're not sure why it's not on in situations. Mm. One of the things they added this patch was that if there's two or more support items on the enemy team, you're much less likely to get them turned on for you.
Yep. Because, that's why I started out the conversation talking about.
Yeah, but I think it makes the formula really like it from game to game. You're like, when is this turn? Like, it's hard to find the pattern in that sense where there's so many things that it's dependent on.
But it's very confusing.
It's so obfuscated from the player that you're just like, I guess it turns on now.
Well, I actually think that is a good change with the Spell Thieves one, having it turn on.
Well, it's a good idea, but you don't know the equation and like what's determining when they turn on still. It's still not clear to a player who's, if you like are not playing and like really trying to take note of every time it turns on, like how are you supposed to learn exactly?
Well, the point is that you're not supposed to learn it. That's why they've kept it hidden, which is just a separate point that I just disagree with.
Yeah, also. I mean, that's where I'm coming at too. I'm like, I don't like your decision to obfuscate it when you start tacking on more and more things into this hidden formula. Like right now, the double enemy gold bounties is significantly less likely, but like what percent is that? What numbers are you, what does significantly less mean to anyone other than the person who put it in there? Yeah. You know, it's like, how do you talk about that in a constructive way when you just have no idea?
Yeah. I mean, objective bounties, I don't know anyone who enjoys them, right? The only positive I will say with objective bounties is that You know, sometimes people FF less, I guess, a little bit.
That's what I would say is I think the visuals and the audio are good tools that do significantly, you know, improve the morale of losing.
A little
teams.
Dopamine hit when the gold shows up.
Yeah,
right?
And I think it having something so that people don't just, you know, FF or rage quit or whatever so early is a good idea. But I think they're a bit too impactful and should be toned down a bit. But I think the visual and audio stuff should be retained.
Yeah.
Regardless, this patch, we can go with our old style of picking out something that you think is interesting or fun or is going to, you know, get into pro play off of this patch. And for me, all of the nerfs were, except for the Zeri one, were focused on solo queue. And the Zeri one, I think I'm not going to even use my points on because I've been looking for those literally since the champion was released. And I'm like, yes, all right, good. We're getting some Zeri nerfs in there. So I won't even go into those, but very happy with that. My speculative one is Rumble with the armor buff coming back into pro play. I'm always just really feel like Rumble is on the cusp of coming back in. He is still such a good flex pick. Can lane, you can be put in back into the jungle still, even with the changes, but you do definitely need a leash. And if you get invaded on, then it's going to be very painful. But I think especially with the armor buff, there is room to pick him as a counter pick into some of these melee range attack damage picks because he has such good wave control and can snowball objectives so incredibly well still with his ultimate. You know, if you're looking at some of these team fights around stacking dragons or around the Rift Herald, he can be an extremely pivotal pick there.
Mid Rumble is still pretty high win rate and has been even pre buff. So I agree. I mean, if people are going to play, you know, some of the physical damage melee mids and stuff like that, I think you could definitely bring back the Rumble mid. I think largely most of the changes in this patch don't really mean much. They're like very small nudges one way or the other, except for Zeri, who kind of got a lot of nerfs, who needed a lot of nerfs. I'm kind of interested to see if the Ashe change actually like is very noticeable at all. You know, the travel speed on the arrow can go up to double the speed based on the distance. So it's specifically for like cross map alts or long range alts. So I'm kind of interested to see how well that works. Like they reference cross map alts, but I actually immediately thought of just like down a lane alts, right? Where like you're coming back. There's sometimes situations when you're playing Ashe where it'd be like my support and jungler are like holding at the tower and you can like ult down the lane or your support's there and they're pushing up for plates and you can like throw an arrow down lane. If it starts going really fast to where it's like actually very tough to dodge, could be kind of powerful. And Ashe has been getting ignored pretty hard lately. So I'm not sure if it's enough to really affect anything for pro play, but it's at least an interesting change.
Yeah, it's cool. Those are the types of like neat changes, you know, that's kind of exciting, but you're not super worried it's going to blow up in the game or something.
Yeah.
The one for me is the Riju beads. Pour one out for the regen starts that they always try and kill in the meta. And this one's been around for a while, but there's always been the 13-part pot strat for Mordekaiser and Katarina's back in the day. There's always some cheesy way to be able to sit in lane and farm out to the items you actually want. This one, I'm kind of down with, honestly. It's like Akali abuses it in tough range matchups. It's usually champions like that who have no hope of winning the early laning phase unless you just like camp under turret in CS. And that's a pretty boring thing to see in pro play anyways, for the most part. So I'm kind of down to get hit the nerf. It didn't actually make Riju bead worse. It just made it, they doubled the value basically. You get more regen and it costs twice as much.
I actually think ironically, it's kind of a buff to the item for a lot of champions. Like, cause it's like, you basically now just buy like one high value Riju bead as a laning item for champions who will then build that later. Right. And it's kind of strange because I know in the patch note they reference, oh, it's like this new strategy evolving, you know, that became popular, like a new strategy that's cropped up or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like Triple Riju bead starts have been around forever. The only thing I'm seeing it more on lately is Akali and Pro Play doing Triple Riju bead. So like maybe they're more referencing that. Because at least in solo queue and stuff, almost always you'll see that Triple Riju bead is like a lower win rate than just the D shield start with like resolve secondary or second win and stuff. But I can see myself actually doing it more on champions where I might build like a Warmog second or things like that, because then you don't even have to sell them off and they don't fill up your inventory. You just like buy one, right? Start D shield. You're having a rough early lane. You base, you pick up a Riju bead and refillable and you're kind of chilling.
Yeah. So either way, it's going to impact pro play a little bit. But like you said, the D shield start is still an option. So I don't think it's going to knock out any champ that relied on this. It's just going to hopefully lead to a less lame play style.
Well, the only key here is that you can only do it on champions that aren't going to sell the items now, because the sell back price was significantly hit back down to 40%. So yeah, you are wasting a lot more if you sell it.
Yeah. And with the changes, as Ale said too, it's not like you can stack them as easily anyways to sell back. So they kind of like double hit it in that way where you can't buy three out the gate. You can only buy one.
Yeah,
because they're 300 now. So.
And it really hurts it for a champion like then Akali, right? Who's just like has no item that you're going to build out of this. You're not going Knight's Vow. You're not going, you know, Warmogs, right? It's going to make it more of like a tank only item probably. But I do think for tanks, it could be pretty good. It's just like you buy this as a laning item instead of just like a random cloth armor or whatever. It's probably going to have a lot more value early game. So
yeah,
I'm at least going to mess around with it some. But yeah, pretty small patch. Doesn't feel like a super impactful patch beyond the big Zeri nerfs, which hopefully will put her more in line, because she's way too high win rate in solo queue. She's way too good in pro play to where she's just like permaban. So definitely glad to have her knocked down a few pegs.
Yes. Alrighty, done with the patch notes. Do you want to get straight into last weekend?
Sure.
Or do you want to go into the look ahead and then talk about the teams as we just go into the look ahead? What do you prefer?
Look ahead, baby.
Let's look straight ahead.
Eyes forward, Mark.
I took the rear view mirror out of my car. I don't even use it because I only look ahead. Backing up's a real struggle. I don't got a camera either.
You're like most LA drivers. You don't have side mirrors. You don't have a rear view. No blinkers. Dude,
have you been in his car, by the way?
No.
Because I'm pretty sure you sold the car. So this whole story is a big lie. That is a cloud of
Every time I get into Ashley's car, I take the rear view down.
Okay.
Make her put it back up.
Yeah.
Anyways,
consider yourself lucky that you never had to get in Mark's old car that he trashed.
It was great. All right, 100 Thieves versus Golden Guardians. Interesting matchup, considering that 100 Thieves feels like the team that is always underestimating teams that they're expected to beat. For example, Immortals, they drop games to Dignitas in Lock-In. I forget who they lost. FlyQuest was it in Lock-In as well? But then you see them beat EG in such convincing fashion the same weekend. And it's hard to ignore the win and ignore the loss. So you're just like, which is the real 100 Thieves?
They're both, right? Like, couldn't they just be an inconsistent team? I think maybe that's some of the issues. I mean, it was interesting hearing Giloto was talking about 100 Thieves as like, I think it was you who asked them or someone asked them like, oh, which team's a fraud, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, all the teams are competitive. I'm not saying this to like blast them, but 100 Thieves won't be near the top. Like, he thought they would drop down. And that was one of the teams that he called out as like a fraudulent team based on their current standings. Basically because he said, hey, like they haven't actually fixed any of their problems from last year. Like, they had the same problems all last year. We come into the next year, they have the same problems. And I do think that some of that does show, like one of the things that they really struggled with last year that they often got criticism was their ability to close out games, right? That they would sometimes create these really big early game leads and then they just kind of like stall out forever and hope they can find a random fight. And then if they fail in that fight, they could win the game. Otherwise, they really did struggle to close. They weren't that great at actually closing through objectives. They weren't great at actually closing through like split push. They really rely on fights. And I do think that can kind of hurt you. If a team doesn't give you those fights, or if a team has a better comp for those fights, then you can drop games that you're not necessarily supposed to drop. So that's something that I think they are going to have to work on, right? And that's something that I think has plagued them for a year and a bit now.
And I thought that 100 Thieves actually showed some significant growth since that appearance by Andre on the desk and since he said that. Because
was that literally this weekend?
Immediately right after it.
Oh, okay.
It was pre this weekend.
Oh.
It was last weekend.
I think it was Saturday.
It was literally this Saturday.
Weekend. Yeah,
he said that after their Tryndamere game and after.
No, before the Tryndamere game was on Sunday.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it was before this kind of robust answer, I felt like, from 100 Thieves, where they had shown their old play style of, oh yeah, let's just slap Sunday on the Ornn, you know, take down one of the top teams again. Versus that was Team Liquid, right? With when they pick Renekton into it, and they basically checkmated them with their kind of old style, play towards bot, someday on Ornn. But then they pick the Tryndamere, which is super popular right now, into the Graves, Hole Breaker, split push, and someday played it extremely well. That actually gave me a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
And maybe the reason why is because it came the next day, then very right after Andre had that interview, but also they also had the failing who he set game right into and back to back who he set very strong.
That's getting buffed. It's who he buffed
on the front line, because the first one they were in a position to win and they go for the fight.
That was the same TL game, wasn't it?
Towards mid lane.
The Immortal game?
It was the Immortal.
It was a different one. Because he goes for the dunk straight up the middle, gets blown up. The Jinx resets off his death, and then they kill a whole team and push down and win. Mm-hmm. And so that to me was like one of those failures that was not a, oh, we don't know how to close out games. That was a poor team fight execution on your positioning and your engage for the team fight. And they're like, no problem. We reviewed it, right back at it. And who he had much better flanking positions for his set. They utilized the split push someday. Like I thought that they showed growth, which is exactly what Andre was kind of worried about for this team, basically, and why he did not.
I guess the one counterpoint I would say is like to me, like them trying to force a bad fight to close a game is them showing that weakness, right? It's not just team fight execution, because I feel like that the set thing showed what he was talking about and what, or at least what I believe to be one of their big weaknesses.
I think they could have won that. I don't think the team fight was bad. I think it's just that engage that was bad. But, they but could have won that team fight.
For sure. Like, but that's kind of my point, is that they have an over-reliance on that. They don't win the game in other ways. So sometimes they end up having trying to force these things because that's their way to advance the game forward. And like I agree, their Tryndamere game was a good game. But I mean, it's just one game. I'm not trying to say they're a bad team or anything, but I still just think like that's, I think it's a big cause.
You want a string of those.
Exactly. And to me, that's a big cause for their inconsistencies, right? And we're just talking about, oh, like, you know, how can this team like lose to Immortals and then like crush GG, you know, like get knocked out by Dignitas and then, you know, beat TL. To me, it's because they show the same issues, and it's just not always, it's like more up to sometimes their opponents to see if they can capitalize on those or kind of like, you know, circumvent some of their strengths.
Yeah, even in that Immortals game, it wasn't like that was the only bad who he engaged. Like if they just biff some final fight, you know, and they just like give a Jinx a reset, I'd be like, all right, whatever, you know, crappy engage, move on. But they had like one I noticed that I only saw when rewatching was Abadage pinged a ward that the enemy team, it was in mid lane, that the enemy team was in front of, and he wanted Someday to TP to it, and he takes a Ryze ult in, and Someday just doesn't TP to it, and so the Ryze just ends up alone in the middle of three people, and it's like, they clearly communicate. I can see the assist, like the ping on the ward you want to go to. The Renekton is like clear to teleport. There's no one near him, and they just don't do it. And like, there was the Huhi fight near Rift Herald where he went in early as well. And like, there's just some of these like consistent team fight problems, especially when I feel like they're playing lesser teams. That like,
except for me, I feel like they're not consistent, because that game, that was one game that all these references are coming from.
But what about and the Dignitas series? And what about
the,
like
and the very next game,
the FlyQuest game?
So that's why I'm saying it's inconsistent.
Yeah.
Because the very next game, it was so much better.
They're consistently inconsistent.
Yeah, that's our point. Is that this has been a plague, an issue that's plagued them, though, for it's not just that one game. It was in lock-in. It was, you know, against FlyQuest and the Dignitas. It was all last year in the end of summer and in spring. They would have these amazing early games, and then be like, well, but they really should close out this game faster than they are, right? And they would drop some of those games because they struggle to know how to advance the state of the game.
My very last point, then, Justin, because this started out as Andre predicting them to be bottom six.
Well, just the drop from first is really all he said.
They did this, and if you're like, oh, using last year as a reference, they finished first. Being that,
well, so here's what I'm gonna say.
But the league got better.
What I was gonna say is just simply that they also beat EG and TL during their 3-1 start so far.
Yep.
It's just the drop games that make me nervous, but like they're clearly still an amazing team. And I just feel like they fall prey to trap games, or I don't know exactly what it is, or like the team just gets overconfident, they don't play as well. That is less of like a, oh my God, this team will never get it together. They're not, I don't think they're frauds. I don't really agree with Andre to
be
honest.
Well, and he said fraud in the terms sense, of not going to stay in their current position at the top.
You're right, yeah.
Yeah, and he was, he even started by saying, this is going to be inflammatory, you know?
Yeah, so, because he
never used the word fraud. I used the word fraud to frame him, to be honest.
Like, but he was down for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I respect it.
We're somewhat complicit in the framing.
I love Andre.
Yeah, he's awesome. No shot at him, but just like, I think 100 Thieves clearly has the skill to compete with everyone. It's just, from Andre's perspective, they are also the team that should be the best right now because they've been together the longest compared to EG and TL. And so he thinks that these, you know, the other teams in first will continue to grow and they might be stagnant and get surpassed. And and that's why I think their matchup versus Golden Guardians, I want to see them be able to dominate consistently and string together a bunch of wins without dropping one of these like meh games.
Yeah.
We should probably talk about the GG side a little bit because we went way down the rabbit hole on 100 Thieves, understandably so. But Golden Guardians, they had a 2-0 weekend, but it's not one that necessarily makes you think, ah, they're going to the top of the table. You know, they squeaked by CLG and TSM, the two winless teams. Both of them were close games, right? Both of them could have gone either way. The Golden Guardians TSM game was like probably the most wild game of the year so far. It was actually so fun to cast. There were so many moments in the game where I was like, oh, it should be over, right? But then the teams were making mistakes and the other teams were capitalizing on it. It was kind of just like back and forth. Like one team punishes a mistake, then the other team punishes a mistake. And it's just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And at least for Golden Guardians, I do think it's a big morale boost for them to get the 2-0. Ablaze Olive tweeted out this is his first ever 2-0 in LCS. So like that's cool, to have a big weekend for him. It's a benchmark for them. But clearly still a lot of things to work on. And for me, like my close notes for Golden Guardians was the same thing as last week in some of the games that they lost, was they need to actually close out some of these games through split push. They did a similar thing where they're playing against the Enchanter top on Graves. They created this massive advantage through split push, through hard committing to it. And he's like, but what if I group though? And then they just start losing all these fighting into 5v5. You just need to keep running it downside. And they actually ended up eventually going back to that and closing out the game after it had gotten close through split push, because no one can answer the split push when these teams are built for 5v5. And that's how they beat TSM. That's how they should have won in against FlyQuest when they were playing Gwen, where he had an equally massive lead on the Gwen and then tried to group for 5v5. But you know, so still things to work on, but I'm hopeful that at least they will have shored up like what their win conditions should be, at least against my top, because they've played a few games against it now.
The thing about the split push thing too, it's like I can see why they stopped grouping, because Ablaze Olive keeps dying in the side lanes.
Yeah, he had a bad game.
I am such an Ablaze Olive fan. You know, like I was hyping him up a lot last summer, and he's been, you could argue, the worst mid in the league maybe so far.
I think he has been the worst mid.
He has played Victor a fair amount and just died over and over. He feels like he dies to every gank. When he's in the side lane, he's dying again. And I mean, people finding angles on you in side lanes and stuff is not just like your problem, but he's the one who's looking bad because of it potentially, whether that's vision control or communication, who knows, or maybe he is just AFK pushing and not respecting the opponent. I'm not in the comp, so I don't know, but it's making him look very, very bad so far this split. And that's one of the reasons I'm a little scared for them, because I was like, it's a pretty easy, in air quotes, mid pool potentially here for him to look good in, and he actually looks worse than summer.
Yeah, as far as our overarching topic on inconsistency, I feel like this matchup, this game, you know, it's got that extra volatility to it. But if you pit the two together that we've been discussing for both these teams, it definitely is going to come in as a, you know, 100 Thieves favorite because of it. I was just smiling so much because I was remembering that game that you're talking about with TSM and them. And I literally left the room. I was watching with Flowers in the talent room, and I literally left the room three separate times because I'm like, okay, we're about to go on to cast after this game is over. I'm going to go to the bathroom. And I come back. I'm like, you ready to go? And he's like, it's still going, bro. And then now TSM's going to win. And I was like, oh, okay. And then like, it gets really close. They're at the base again. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go get a coffee first before we go. And I go and I get it. I'm like, you ready now? And he's like, no, now Golden Guardians are going to win. And I keep coming back in. It was like a comedy sketch. I'm like, all right, you ready to go now? Nope, the other team's gonna win now. That was just such a hilarious,
it was a wild game.
It was so fun to be on that late game roller coaster where, you know, it's just back and forth.
I think I wrote like 8 different tweets, you know, like you start drafting your tweet to hit send right when the game ends, and like I had to delete that like 4 different times. And it was a bit of a mess that game, but it was a fun mess.
It was really fun. That was maybe my favorite game this from login or a split, just because it was like, sometimes to get those games, they're not the most clean games, but it's like they're so unexpected because you really don't know who's going to win. It goes back and forth, and there was a lot of action and like a lot of tense moments where you kept seeing like, you know, these big moments for other teams. But yeah, it was an exciting one. Golden Guardians going to be looking to build on it. The one thing I will say on the Ablaze Olive thing, maybe before we jump forward, is I think he's been really poor at getting caught in sides, but I will at least say his team fighting on the Victor was really good. He was finding a lot of multi-man lasers, a lot of AoE damage into these comps where like he was actually setting them up for wins in team fights. But I agree, he has been struggling, and it's like, you can put some of it on your team for not getting you more vision for through sides, but you also have to accept responsibility for, if you want to play it smart, you just have to accept that if you don't have vision, you have to give up more waves because it's not worth pushing for the wave if you're being consistently killed for it. It's just always going to be a net loss for your team.
Yeah.
But next matchup we got is Immortals versus TSM. We talked a fair bit about TSM, obviously, because of their slow start. So maybe you guys want to touch on the Immortals side first?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is the Immortals game versus 100 Thieves, where Immortals also, you know, I was so hyped for seeing them get their first win, you know, on stage. And they
did, and over 100 Thieves.
They did, yeah, they did a lot of proactive things to earn themselves that win. So I think that was one of the biggest things, because this team had been looking really sluggish coming together. And I especially had thought that they were going to have a bit of a quicker start than this, considering our ongoing conversation about reorganizing this team. Yep. And what they also did in the offseason.
0-6 start. So,
definitely very positive stuff, basically all across the map for me.
I think it's hopefully... like momentum and like mentality when we're talking about TSM, and you know, when does it become too much of a mental strain? You know, I think this win was huge for Immortals for that reason. It was their first win this year on stage for this lineup, which, you know, given that they also played in lock-in and went 0-4 there, it felt like, oh my God, they are really struggling. And so this hopefully can begin a turning point for them, because it still feels like a lineup that is too good to be 1-3 and like the eighth best team in the league. And that's kind of, even though we all pinned them to be in the lower half, we all agreed like who knows this roster. So like PoE should be better than this. Even this weekend, I didn't like the game against Cloud9 for him, and I think he can be better than that. The bot lane as well, like Turtle had a great Jinx game. We hope we can see more of that. Like I think this is a team that, I don't know about top half of the league, but kind of be a gatekeeper for the other teams that are struggling.
All this being said, and all this congratulations to Immortals for getting their first win. However, I feel like this game is poised to be TSM's first win. You know, this is one that is set up in a very exciting manner, even though, you know, both the teams currently at the bottom of the standings. I feel like there's actually a pretty good matchup for them here. Huni, especially the top lane, to me, it just seems so volatile. Immortals and lock-in showed that they're willing to pick anything up there, right? They constantly were trying to flex all these different picks and all these different carries. So I'm extremely excited to see what Champ Select looks like, especially for the top lane here versus TSM with how they've been playing. And with the last play, I know everybody's going to think of Spica and Huni trying to go for that dive and just completely botching it. I don't think that's going to be something that they turn away from, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're both really aggressive players, so I think they'll continue to go for that. The Immortals side, I mean, Dardoch gave an interview even talking about, like, it was a really important win for them because they had lost six in a row, and, like, the pressure starts to really feel like it's mounting when you have lost so many stage games in a row. Like, you know, are we this bad kind of thing? Yeah. So I do think it was a big, big mental win for them. And honestly, I do think they were kind of lucky to get it. Like, I'm still pretty negative on this team because it did feel more like a 100 Thieves throw than an Immortals win to me. I like Turtle had some really good moments, but he also had some really bad moments in that game. He had some really good ones. I think, I don't know if you were in the back room watching it with us, but there was a few. Like there was one where, God, who was it? It was maybe Viego or something, but he's on Jinx and he's in rocket form the entire fight over by Baron, and he never switches off rocket form and he doesn't kite back whatsoever, and the melee champion just like slowly walks into range and then kills the teammates and then kills him. I think it was maybe Viego or something, I can't remember exactly who it was, but it was like he wasn't even in minigun, he's literally in melee range of this character, and it's like he wasn't even moving his character, he wasn't even piloting it. It was just really, really weird to watch. And then the death at Raptors after everyone got killed at Baron, and he just stays at Raptors, sees the guy coming, blows cleanse and flash, and then still dies. And I think it was Viego that killed him both times, but there was a few where it was just like, it seemed like checked out of the game, right? You know, where it's like, oh, we lost the fight, like we're screwed kind of thing. So I'm really glad that they got that win, but it did feel like, it didn't build a lot of confidence in the team for me, because I still feel like they look completely disjointed, and that's their biggest problem, is they look like the worst team. They do not look like the worst players, but they are the worst team in the league. See, as far as how they play together.
Do you have Copium? Because I have Copium.
A little bit. I was going to say maybe it's because I had a low bar set from all their losses that I did count the improvements, you know, and I'm not looking for perfect games.
Yeah.
For a lot of these scenarios, we have, you know, different microscopes that we're going for. And I'm not looking for perfect games here, but I am looking for the minutia as far as the improvements come from. And though that's what made me excited.
There are some improvements.
Because if you start bringing it up, like, especially the Raptor, yeah, it was Closer who killed them both times. Closer. Yeah. Should have, like, Closer would probably report his teammates after that game for that one. He was carried.
He carried
so hard.
The hell out of that game. Yeah. He was playing
until
Tom
they,
Kench
until
better.
They lost. Yeah.
He was playing Tom Kench better than Destiny.
Especially the last engage from Huey, where it was like, it wasn't even the engage might have worked, but he was already chunked down to like what 50% or 60% before he even tried it.
You get the copium. Mark.
So here's the copium.
All right.
They've played Dig, TL, 100 Thieves, C9. Those are the four best teams in the league, basically.
What about Lock-In, though, where they lost to Academy teams?
Dig?
No.
Immortals? Oh, well, yeah. So those suck. And so, like, yeah. You can't take too much from my copium.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, after Lock-In, coming into this string of games, you would say they should probably be 0-4.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they stole one against 100 Thieves is actually, like, pretty positive. And they're entering... It's like, the perfect point for, like, strength of schedule arguments, because we're almost at the halfway point of the season. And so people, like... 100 Thieves are going to start playing weaker opponents, and so they might actually string together a couple of these wins with taking on TSM, like we said. Eventually they'll play CLG and Golden Guardians and the other people kind of around them, and I think maybe they can actually put together some wins, because they do have, like we said, like on paper, a good lineup.
Yeah, that's why I was highlighting this game is kind of a turning point or an inflection point for both Immortals and TSM.
Yeah,
I feel like, as organizations, because it is that cross section of the rankings. And whenever you do strength of schedule and ranking stuff really early, like when there's only three or four games, it's funny because if we're evaluating a team as a top team and you contributed to one of that team's wins, like you're the ones that made them a top team.
Yeah,
by
yeah.
25% of their wins are off you.
Yeah.
All the top teams played Immortals, thinking emoji.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why they're the top teams.
It is definitely funny, but it's a big one. I agree. I mean, TSM, they had never started 0-3 before. Now they're 0-4. If they lose this, they play Cloud9 the next day, which is like, if you go 0-5, you're probably going 0-6. So it starts to get a little bit scary. They start to have that feeling that Immortals were at, because this was a roster that wasn't there for Lock-In. Mm-hmm. So the honeymoon phase is definitely over. They got to get a win this weekend, I think, or the gloves are going to come off. We have another really good matchup to follow that one up. It is TL versus EG.
Match of the week! I think. Yeah, match of the week.
That's my match of the week.
Yeah, I was looking at Sunday real quick to make sure. But this is definitely the match of the week. It's also a bit of a rematch.
You could say every game that we have in the LCS is now a bit of a rematch.
I just mean the JoJo versus Bjergsen, like, storyline. It's like some of those things that have been prevalent through the season early
they
on.
They got clapped in the finals.
Yeah, they got clapped in the finals. Like, it's a bigger rematch than the other rematches that we always rematch every week.
I like that.
Every game is a rematch, but this is like a legit one where
But this is a real rematch.
This is a real rematch where, like, the players already have history from this season a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think, one, that's going to be a huge point, just the mid lane as well, because JoJo has come back down to earth a little bit. The beginning of Lock-In was incredible. Yeah. Everyone was all over that hype train. Gets smacked down by Bjerg in the finals. And then since then has been like a little more hit or miss.
I got a analogy for this rematch being different from other rematches as well, because it also, whenever Bjergsen plays JoJo in Champions Queue, you know, the little bot will tweet out the matchups.
Yeah.
Everyone gets hyped on social media and Twitter. And it's like, it feels like the Matrix, where they're like, everyone get in here. Morpheus is fighting Neo.
I love that.
The young guy, the new NA talent, is fighting Bjergsen, the greatest of all time. And everyone's like, everyone get in here. Like, hype it up, even though it's just a random solo queue or challenger queue game. Does make it feel like it has a next level and is a really cool theme to continue to revisit.
It is really, really exciting. And that's going to be something that I think people are looking at for a long time, right? You know, for these guys over the course of the year and stuff. It's an interesting game for me as well, because, you know, it's not just like JoJo stuff has cooled down a little bit, but they cooled down a little bit as well as a team. You know, I think now losing 100 Thieves, they lost the C9. If they lose the TL as well, you talk about expected top teams. All of a sudden, you've lost to, you know, all the kind of expected top teams in a row, mm-hmm. and they would actually be starting 2-3, right? Because they have back-to-back 1-1s. They beat the teams they're expected to beat. They lose to the other kind of like top teams at the top of standings. So I do think it's a pretty big one for them to be able to show that they are still kind of like hanging with the big dogs and being able to keep up. Obviously, it is still very early in the season, but I'm interested to see some of their adaptations because, I mean, they have tried some different things. Like, they brought out the Akali. That was kind of cool, but it didn't really feel like it got a lot of value in that game. People obviously were playing Tank Akali. There's been, like, a small amount of AP Akali since those nerfs, but it hasn't really looked great in any of the individual games. And especially in that one, it was, like, so much about top lane where somebody had such a great
Yeah, it was over game. Before the Akali was even, like, online.
Yeah, like, it's obviously a tough one to actually play from, but that's becoming a very common matchup where you have, like, the Ghost Graves versus the Ghost Tryndamere. They're both building for side lane, and, like, you know, if Tryndamere gets ahead, the Graves is never going to kind of come back in and be relevant. So I'm excited for this one. I think, you know, TL as well are coming off like a really pretty strong weekend, you know, beating C9, they beat Fly. I think Bippo looked absolutely incredible. Like when you pair the lock-in plus regular season performance, like he's the MVP right now, right? Like he got player of the week. I think that he is looking so incredibly good. Like his Gragas game especially was such a standout game. Like the final couple engages were amazing when they played C9, and he had multiple interrupts, you know, with like the max range Gragas ult to actually like interrupt the Karthus ult, then the E flash over the wall. Like the observers actually did such a good job with that, yeah, too, that where they setup. Turned off the fog and then he just appears over the wall and finds the team, like the team fight that wins the game. It was a really cool moment.
Yeah. I love every aspect of Bwipo being on Team Liquid to me. we get the reactions, we get in-game exciting plays, which if you think about this organization, for the longest history, basically ever since franchising, the one thing they've really lacked has been an X factor, a wild card, a spark, you know, some aggressive component. Mm-hmm. And Bjergsen references this, multiple of the teammates reference it in their interviews. Bwipo himself talks about learning in game and then, you know, like sees the angle. He's like Demon Slayer finds the thread.
He can see the wind neck. Or whatever.
Yeah. And makes a play like that. And he's not a player that, you know, despite having failures earlier on the game, is going to.
I cut the brain.
Be dissuaded.
Charlie.
Yeah. From going for that. So I really like that aspect of Team Liquid. I'm starting to feel like this matchup for EG is difficult. And I don't always recommend banning Zilean versus Bjergsen as a blanket thing, even though everyone will in hindsight whenever he picks it. But I especially do for EG because JoJo is always better playing across the 50% line of mid lane, playing aggressively, positioning aggressively. And some of these picks, like the Fudge Soraka from the Cloud9 game or a Bjergsen Zilean, I feel like are going to be very hard for EG's playstyle to play into since they're all such aggressive players. And Bjergsen is really good at stuffing people with that champion and countering a lot of these plays. So I'll be hyper-focused on their champ select because it's really hard to squeeze in target bans now. If they're on red side, they might be screwed because they're not moving over to Zeri nerfed patch, which is live right now, 12.4. We're still going to be on 12.3. So red side's still going to have to ban Gwen Zeri for sure.
You can maybe squeeze in the second phase of bans because Bjergsen probably won't.
Early rotation. Pick it.
Yeah, because you'll at least get counterpicked through first rotation on, mm-hmm. if you guys take it early on blue side. But I agree that it does feel like stylistically this is a potential mismatch going forward where TL can play a slow front-to-back play style and kind of a grind. Like, they have Bwipo for the X factor, but they can also, I think, just play a more controlled game. Whereas EG are maybe a little bit more one speed. Like, they want to be, like you said, the aggressors. They want to all be going in there and picking fights all the time. And I don't know. They won that first one, but you don't want to get this mental block built up where you get 3-0 in the finals and then you lose this matchup and then you play one more time in the regular season, you lose that one, and then you're like 1-5 versus TL in the year. And, you know, I could see it happening, though, because like you said, I think TL does have a couple more tricks up their sleeve.
It is interesting to talk about EG as like the like one speed only go type team, though, because to me, like, Danny is more about the mid and late game team fighting. Impact is like pretty chill. Inspired generally wants to farm. You know what I mean? So it's like JoJo wants to do some crazy stuff for sure. And I think Vulcan's like down for it too. But like, I think they're like pretty well balanced in that regard. I still agree. I think if you are going to be like that guy who's willing to like dive in and trade kills and stuff, then you don't want to be playing against Zilean, right?
You're
like
going to be that guy.
Yeah. Like, that I think just kind of answers the play style. But I do think that EG can be like pretty happy to go and play a bit more slowly, but it hasn't necessarily been what they've been going for. And Impact, except in like, I guess the Enchanter top game, but in general, Impact hasn't been playing like the team fighters, right?
Yeah, you that's what I was going to say.
Gwen, Tryndamere, Graves. I mean, Graves is kind of a team fighter, I guess, depending on what the rest of your comp is, but it's more for like early
you're
pressure.
You're not frontline, you're not engaging,
yeah,
which is what a lot of people associate with Impact strengths.
Yeah, and he hasn't done that at all. And I actually think a lot of tanks are quite strong right now. But talking to some of the top laners and just kind of like from what I've seen, people feel like you can't ban Gwen. You can't necessarily like spare a ban for Gwen, but Gwen just like answers all these matchups so incredibly well. So no one's really playing tanks that much right now. Like there's been an Ornn game here or there. I feel like you can fit it in if you're willing to, and then go like an Enchanter bot lane and play heavily for 2v2 with a tank top and maybe have a better chance for a team fighting that way. So like I would be interested to see EG try to match TL like in late game by doing a little bit of a different style, like put Vulcan on an Enchanter, play for scaling from there, put, you know, your Ornn top, and then have a little bit of splash of crazy with like your mid and your jungle, and kind of like, you know, play some 5v5 later on.
Because I do think like they can match crazy. It up. He wants a little splash of crazy.
Well, I just don't think it's ever been like Impact's full play style, right? Like he's good in some of those games. And I think his Tryndamere game actually, like he did play well. That game wasn't on him. You know, I just think his team wasn't really having a kind of a good performance.
Something that we haven't seen, which could be an extra card for EG to plot in this matchup versus Team Liquid specifically, is that Danny loves playing these other enchanters. You mentioned, oh, stick Vulcan on an enchanter. Danny actually is always tweeting about and plays in solo queue so much, like Seraphine bottom and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. They could pull that card and really have a lot of leeway with the rest of their champ select in this type of matchup too, to kind of turn the tables.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
They show strategic diversity with the Karma game. So hopefully we see some more. I'd like to see a curveball. We got Dig, Fly, and C9 CLG, and we're going late. Do you guys have a preference between the two, or do you want to cover all of them? What do you want to do?
Go fast.
We can go fast, yeah. I mean, FlyQuest, I'm just interested to see like if they are going to continue with this Smite top stuff. Like, is that actually their identity? I mean, that they're the team that is committed to it by far the most. I would be interested to see, you know, if Kumo is going to be practicing some of the other styles of top lane. Obviously, we've seen him bring out some of the enchanters, but like, will he bring out Ivern? Will he bring out Twitch? Will he do that kind of stuff? Because if they're the only team that's really kind of committing to it and they still feel like it works post-patch, maybe they're willing to go a little bit deep on it and continue trying to pick up wins that way.
I think the question too is, when do they want to pull it out? Is it draft things that they see that make them want to do it? Because I think it's especially effective against Dignitas, which is what EG did. And I think this is a perfect time to do it because Dig mostly want to play through bot or mid, and that's what gets most annoyed by this strat. You kind of leave top on an island. Fake God's usually their weak side player. So like you kind of empower the player that they don't typically play through. And that's why I thought this weekend when EG did it against Dig, it was the perfect time to do it. And now that they're going up against, you know, the masters of this strategy, you could say, I expect FlyQuest to do it again.
I mean, they only did it the first two games. They didn't do it at all last weekend. So they could already be off of it. So, yeah. I mean, they already played Ornn and Graves instead last weekend. And Kumo in Champions Queue has been spamming a lot of the different options, but is also, you know, playing the tanks or carries up there too. And I feel like it's a very easy switch to, if you have a top laner that you don't want to give a lot of resources to slap on a tank instead, and not just give up the whole lane, you know, and be kind of the blocker lane.
Yep, for sure. I mean, it'll be interesting. I do think for FlyQuest, their bot lane has been solid. Like, I've actually been, you know, really enjoying things with them.
But Dig, though.
Dig,
as an opponent, I feel like is pretty difficult for them, especially because, I feel like River is not going to give them time to set up to a team fight scenario like that. Which to me is going to be the biggest strength for a setup for FlyQuest. I think it's biggest strength for Takuya as well, just across the board. That's how I see this team winning so many games. And Dig have been really good at accelerating because River will play so aggressively so early on.
Yeah, the thing that I like about this as well is it's the Neo Afro grudge match. I don't think any bad blood exists between them, but it's kind of like the...
But it could.
It could. And it's the 80 carry under...
if you make it up,
which
could.
I'm doing right now.
They hate each other.
Well, it's also just like the who's the better pupil, you know? Like, they're both Afro's children. He's raised both these 80 carries, and now they want to see which one's the better. Neo and Johnson both kind of coming up into the scene under him. So I think that's a cool aspect of the bot lane matchup, though River is also going to make it a bot lane party. So
yep, kind of interfered. Should be really interesting. C9 CLG is the last game on Saturday. C9, obviously, they did lose the game to TL, but it was with a little bit of a different look. I hope that they continue to do that. I think that when it was like the Rumble, Morgana, jungle meta, that was not good for Blaber. He didn't look particularly strong on it. And I do think you can criticize some of the stuff that he was doing on the Karthus. You know, I think that recognizing just how far away you have to be, a couple of scenarios. Yes, one time it was like a flash W from Viego that got him. Another time it was a max range body slam into Kask, right? But these are things that had he actually not made those errors, maybe the game looks different. Even just like the way he was positioning, I felt like on the Karthus, sometimes if you realize you're going to die, you need to actually be like going forward, not going back, right? To die in a good spot. So I think there was like some discomfort and he got some criticism for that. But C9 has been flexible and it's been cool to see them, you know, trying different things. And I want to see them continue to try different things because it's early on in the year and you should be building towards playoffs, building towards MSI, building towards, you know, summer. And that's, I think, what they're setting themselves up pretty well with, you know, with these different things. You know, they have the Enchanter mid stuff. They did the Aurelia Aatrox flex. They brought out the Karthus jungle. So like, I like that they're trying out things and I hope that they continue to do so. And I think CLG is a good team to continue to try stuff with because CLG, you know, has not been a super dominant team.
Yeah. I also was going to say,
you pointed at me.
Oh, sorry. That was me raising.
We checked before, like, okay, who's talking next?
That's my bad, because this was actually me raising
his hand.
It was me raising my hand for okay, class.
You raised your finger
at 45 degrees,
a horizontal position, pointing at me. So if the camera,
gotta,
if you're watching on YouTube,
so I can do that. It's going up. You go ahead.
We'll check the fingers. No. We'll review the tapes here.
I concede to the raised finger. I'm now aware that
it was my fault.
You can raise.
Kobe, it was my fault. You should go.
You can raise a finger in my direction, and that counts.
I was just gonna say that I thought C9 was going to lose to TL already, anyways, and I was actually more impressed with how C9 looked in that loss than like what my preconceived notions were. So even though they did lose that game, I actually felt better about Cloud9 coming out of it than I did going into it. Given the fact that some things went wrong in that game, their bot lane got killed, you know, like it wasn't this super smooth game the whole time. And they went blow for blow with Team Liquid with all those mistakes that you're kind of highlighting. And they still could have won that game very easily, which I thought bodes very well for the future.
So how do you feel about CLG?
Bambi quote, if you don't have anything good to say.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, man. I like how you kind of set it up as well, and you're like, well, I hope they keep trying stuff. And this matchup might be an easy matchup to keep trying some stuff against. It's like, pick your choice, I guess. I'm really hoping that we see the resurgence from CLG that got everyone excited from lock-in. You know, this
Luger boom.
Looking with bottom side carry, aggressive plays from mid jungle as well that did work out. Because even in their losses, the early ganks from contracts towards Powell Fox, they had some good combinations, creative ways getting around vision. You know, you can see the pieces here for this CLG lineup. And Jenkins has played so many weak side games that, you know, people are expecting lots of resources down towards Poom and Luger. They have been the kind of shining part of this team that you expect it to continue that way. But they also can have, you know, some pocket picks like the Kennen for Bob Jenkins, who's been his main for so long and is a good pick right now into so many matchups that people are permabanning Gwen and stuff like that, and they've got some options. So I'm really hoping that we do see that resurgence from that team, because I think it's just too easy, because it is CLG and because of the last couple of years, to instantly give up hope.
I think also the problem that they're getting into a little bit right now is they're inconsistent, but they're not inconsistent at the same times. Where like sometimes everyone plays bad, yeah. Sometimes everyone plays good. It's like Jenkins has actually been decent these last couple of weeks, and Palafox has been decent, but it feels like Luger and Puma have taken a step back, and Contrax
has been consistent.
Okay, don't say that. Don't be mean to him.
He's
Kobe's Valentine.
I know.
You can't say that.
And I love Contrax too, but he has been so bad this year. It's been tough because I actually was really excited to have him back on a team. His time through Academy, it felt like he had made really big improvements. He had been developing a lot. And we even had this conversation the other day. It's like, is Contract the worst performing player in the league right now? You know, barring any position. I think it's a clear yes. When you look at his games in lock-in, when you look at his struggles in the start of the season, I don't think this is indicative necessarily of the level that he is capable of performing at, because he was really good in Academy and Proving Grounds, some of these things where it kind of built his way back up and proved that he's LCS caliber and then got here, but it has not been the start that he wanted. He has been really, really poor. And I do think it would be like, you know, just kind of dishonest to say that it's not contributing a lot to why CLG is struggling, because in a lot of these games, he's clearly struggling individually. But yeah. It's tough.
That's
yeah.
My Valentine, man.
Sorry, he's beating him up. I try to protect him.
I mean, I really like Contract. Yeah, I want him to do well, but
he's consistently not been great.
He's been bad.
But I feel like CLG could pick up some wins if, like, he's not so bad that if everyone else was playing well at the same time, Contract was just going to, like, 1v9 inted, I don't think. But, no. Like, right when top lane played better, bot lane's been playing well.
But I thought he was going to be pushing it in the right direction.
You would think he would have been the most consistent member, or at least one of the better members, given his time on EG even just last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But as you're referencing his higher points previously, and some of them aren't too far removed, you know, like last year and stuff too. So do you have confidence that he can?
I think he's going to get better for sure. Yeah. I mean, like, I just think that that's what I'm pointing out, because to me, I did not think he was going to be doing this poorly. I thought he was actually going to be a strong contributor for CLG. And I think a lot of people thought that. That's part of the reason that people were pretty excited, you know, about the roster that they had put together. So I feel bad for him, but I hope he can start having some stronger games. I mean, the Hecarim game from Lock-in really stood out for the wrong reasons. The Lee Sin game as well, I think, from this last weekend was really rough. And if he can have some good performances and the team around him can have some good performances, you know, they can definitely start picking up some wins. One thing that I will say that's actually really cool about this matchup is that both the teams have been very flexible as far as what they're picking. Mm-hmm. It is only through four games, but C9 have had 19 out of 20 unique champions through the four games. They've only double picked once. And CLG have actually only double picked twice. So they have 18 out of a possible 20 unique champions played through the first 2 weeks. So both these teams are actually trying a lot of stuff and clearly, you know, trying to find kind of what works for them. And hopefully CLG will continue to experiment and be able to, like, kind of settle on something that does work, because I don't want people to just, like, get negative on them all of a sudden again, because I do think it's cool that they really did, like, rebuild from the ground up. They changed all their staff, you know, they changed their roster. They're kind of going at it with a different philosophy, and, you know, they have a lot of young players here who I do think have a pretty bright future. So I'm hoping that they can start picking up some wins as well and not just kind of get, like, mentally beat down.
And it's Contract and Palafox versus Cloud9, their old organization that both mm-hmm. of them had a lot of
grudge match,
a lot of growth on. So now's the time to shine, baby.
There you go. All right. Well, it's going to be a really fun weekend. I am looking forward to it. Thank you again, everyone, for all the questions. Really appreciate that. That's going to wrap it up for us for now. Remember, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode of The Dive. Check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor.fm. Keep sending in the questions. We got so many good ones this week on Anchor.fm that we actually skipped the Twitter ones, but we appreciate you sending them in there. We grab stuff from the YouTube comments. And remember, it doesn't have to just be a question. It can be a hot take that we can react to. And shorter is better. If you are concise with your anchor.fm questions, you have a better shot at getting in there. 5 to 10 seconds, that's all it needs to be. We don't need the full background on it, because that'll make it easier to get on the show. LCS continues Saturday, 1:30 p.m. sharp, as 100 Thieves goes up against Golden Guardians. Don't you dare miss it.